Hello, everybody. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Justin Williams. Today, we're joined by two local entrepreneurs who are changing the business landscape. We have the creator and owner of Alaskan Footprints Food Tours, Sourdough Dan Morris, who offers historical insight, humor, and delicious delicacies in his treks. And we also have the founder of Anchorage Independent Worker Alliance, Atlas Qatari, dedicated to connecting like-minded entrepreneurs in the city together. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here, to be back with you guys. I've been doing a lot of stuff. If you follow me on social media, you know, all I do is eat more than I breathe. Food's just more important than oxygen. That's kind of the reality of the situation. And in my lovely food review ventures, I ran into a gentleman who, you know, we actually have a little bit of an intertwined history, and we didn't know that until we started asking each other some questions. And I brought him in because he has created such a wonderful, small, homegrown business that means a lot to me. Food tours. At least that's what I call them, food tours. And I brought him in because I want the people to know about the small business. It's benefiting the city. It's benefiting tour season. And it's Alaska to the bone. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I brought with me Sourdough Dan. How are you doing, Mr. Dan Morris?
Doing very well. I really appreciate you having me, man. This is great.
I appreciate you being here. So I got to go on your food tour with Alaska Footprints. I thought it was a magnificent time. We had a small gang of people, right? And I'm pretty sure I was the only one born and raised in Alaska in that group. So I had a pretty unique perspective on, you know, being educated about certain things about the city. You have an extensive knowledge about the history of Alaska, the history of the city of Anchorage, and some of the restaurants that, you know, we went on tour during that time. And so I basically wanted to ask you in a nutshell, man, like, you know, how did this business get started, man? Like, what's your story?
Yeah, so me and my brother, we're born and raised in Wasilla. You know, we're from the area. We grew up, you know, the background, our backyard basically was the Talkeetna Mountains. So all the things that Alaskans do, you know, we did in the Talkeetna Mountains, Hatcher Pass and the Willow Side and Palmer Side and all of that. We just grew up here. And we really got into the tour business because I was part of a website called Couchsurfing.com. And basically what that is you invite travelers, mostly young backpackers, into your home to stay for free on your couch.
Yeah.
I was one of the top hosts in Alaska for 2 years in a row. I hosted well over 200 people. And every weeknight and on the weekends, I was taking people out to restaurants. I was taking them out to bars. I was taking them out sightseeing. Mm-hmm. And I loved it.
Yeah.
I love telling people stories. I love being out there with them, getting more, you know, as much time outdoors as I possibly could. Mm-hmm. And I just started thinking to myself, I should be getting paid for this.
Yeah.
And it took me another 4, maybe 6 years to convince my brother to go into business with me and to start this company. But we finally did it this year, and we have had a lot of success and a lot of fun. We are loving it. It's been absolutely phenomenal. Meeting people from all over the world is just my jam.
You know, a lot of people in occupations like this, especially like tour guides or like Airbnb hosts, couch surfing hosts, they pretend to care. Right. But I could tell that there's something genuine in you. You really actually do care about the people. You care about the food we eat. You care about this place. And that makes you excruciatingly qualified to do a job like that. I think, man, I think you do a fantastic job. But being a tour guide, I think there's some challenges to it. What are some of the challenges of being a tour guide for you that you either foresee or that you've experienced so far?
I think the biggest challenge I run into with being a tour guide is people sometimes, it's pretty rare, but people have too high of expectations. Mm. So we're limited because sometimes a restaurant doesn't have enough people to, you know, staff it. Or we don't have the history of food culture like a place like New Orleans, you know. So people they come from these big cities and they have these really, really high expectations. Mm-hmm. It's just not the way it always works in the real world.
Right.
And sometimes restaurants are closed. Sometimes they don't have the staffing. The wait's a little bit longer. Sometimes the food is not as elaborate as they're used to in a big, big city. So they just kind of have to temper their expectations. We have good food here. We have very good food here.
Yes, we do.
And we've come a long way, I think, especially in the last, like, I don't know, 10 years or something like that.
Absolutely.
And I think part of that is because people have gone out into the lower 48 in different places. They've learned to cook, and eventually they come home and they're bringing these experiences with them. And so we're getting more and more elevated. But, you know, as you probably know, you know, Alaska's always been like a blue collar state. It's been about how cheap the food is and how much of it you can get, because they need a big hearty meal to go to work every day. Mm-hmm. So the elaborate, you know, different types of food that are like exotic or elaborate, they really haven't come into their own until more recently in, you know, history. Mm-hmm. So it's getting there, you know. We're definitely development. We have some fantastic cooks, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, I love it.
Yeah. And I'm always thinking about the food culture here. I'm always thinking about how, you know, for Alaska, or at least for Anchorage, right? There's the city of Anchorage. We are just, it almost feels like a puzzle, right? And every piece of that puzzle is like the history of some other location, right? Some other geography, some other whatever. And I always say this when we have elaborate talk about Anchorage food culture, we're so behind, you know? But I can understand how someone from the lower 48 will look at us. They've never been. They hear all these fantastical stories and stuff like that. And they have their own perception of what we are or what we're supposed to do based off of magazines or Hollywood. You know, those ridiculous reality TV shows, you know, and they come up here and they're like, oh, that's it. So is this something that you only really plan to do during the quote unquote tourist season?
Oh, no, we plan to operate year round. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of plans for expansion. You know, food tours, walking food tours is what we had to do this summer because Ford stopped production on vans last year.
Right.
So we had planned to get 2 to 4 vans this year, but it didn't work out. And we just had to figure something else out. Not really at the last minute, but within a couple months of the season starting. So we're like, hey, my brother actually is the one that come up with the idea for the food tours. And then we were like, well, mm-hmm. let's do walking food tours because it's really simple. It's cheap to get into and nobody else in town is doing it. We're the only show in town. So we definitely plan to expand. We're going to be doing sightseeing. We're going to be doing wildlife. We're going to be doing some hikes. Mm-hmm. We plans for some more, food tours around across the city once we have van tours.
Absolutely.
Or vans. And then we're also going to be operating some different things that I don't want to mention on the air just because it's still kind of a secret and a surprise and we want to get into that at a later date and we want to be the first ones on the scene doing it. Yeah. So it's hard to talk about future plans without getting too far into that. You know what I mean?
You don't want to give other people ideas.
Right. Well, you know, you got to keep a few secrets.
Absolutely.
You got to be mysterious.
Absolutely. It works, brother. It works. And so you said it was your brother's idea to do the food tours. And I noticed something because, you know, when I went to your food tour, I'd been to every restaurant that we had gone during that tour, except for the first one. And I actually went to that restaurant just the other day because it was just so darn good when I went with your group. And but I noticed a problem is that it being downtown, I was so frustrated with not being able to find parking. So what you just said about starting downtown and it just being on foot, that makes everywhere downtown that much more accessible. I didn't even think about that until I tried to go to this place yesterday and I was going in circles, dude. My mind was going crazy. I was just like, dude, it's right there. And it's just adjacent instead of directly accessible because that's just how downtown is. That's how it's designed. So I thought that was really, really cool. And your brother's, it was your brother's idea to do the food, to incorporate that. How did that aspect come to be? Just the food, because you could always do a tour and provide really interesting tidbits about the city, about Mount Readout, whatever you want, and just make it extra Alaskan. But people don't come up here for the food. So when you go on your food tour, you make the food a part of the Alaskan history and experience. So between you and your brother kind of establishing that, incorporating that, how did that come to be? That's just really interesting to me.
Well, I think so. I'm not the one, obviously, that came up with the idea. But I mean, just being the fact that we're such a big city and don't have a food tour, there have been some in the past.
Okay.
But for whatever reason, they didn't take off. Not sure why that is. But he just recognized that most cities have a food tour. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, we should do this. And I thought, this is a fantastic idea. So how are we going to do it? And we just had to come up with a good plan. And I think part of the reason we've had success is because we don't do like a sit down, fine dining or elaborate meal. Right. We do samples at every place. Right. So everybody gets a taste and we're up and out of there 20, 30 minutes, maybe 40 if it's, right. you know, taking a little bit more time. But I think that's where the key is that we're giving people a sample of all these different restaurants and all these different tastes of Alaska and getting them to see all these different things that we have available. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know exactly how he came up with it other than that, just recognizing that nobody else was doing it. And when nobody else is doing something, you have a big opportunity. Mm-hmm. I would say that 80 to 90% of my guests do a food tour in every city that they go to when they travel. And it's usually the first thing they do. So wow. most of my guests have arrived in Alaska in Anchorage the night before.
Okay.
And then we're the first stop. We're the first tour. We're the first people they see.
No way.
And it gives us an incredible opportunity because not only can in the future we can talk ourselves up for the other tours we offer, but we can also tell them where to go to eat. We mm-hmm. can tell them where to go to see, what tour companies to go to. Mm-hmm. And all the things that they want to know, they get answered from me.
Yeah.
So all our partners and the people that we've worked with and associated with, we get to kind of give a little bit of an advantage to them because we know they're very good at their jobs mm-hmm. or that they offer very good food. And we get to send these people to the right places so they get the right experience when they visit Alaska and Anchorage.
Wow. That's pretty dope. It's dope because when you incorporate food, it brings so many more people to the table, you know, even if you don't have a sociological, psychological relationship with it, or at least on the surface or anything like that. Food is just food. It's sustenance. We need it. Without it, we're probably not going to live very long. When we went, we sampled, right? We sampled here and we sampled there and we sampled here and we sampled there. What more did you have to say, Dan, on our relationship with food as in regards to your business, in regards to the city of Anchorage, the state of Alaska?
Well, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head is that we do have a relationship with food is just something that's ingrained in us. You know, one of the two things I like to ask several different questions when I'm doing these tours, right? One is, what is the favorite and best thing you ever ate?
Mm.
And that gets people thinking,
mm-hmm.
you know, you talk about it and people like their faces light up. And they remember all the details. Like, for example, the best thing I ever ate was in Nagano, Japan. Mm-hmm. And I sat down near the train station to have a bowl of ramen. And I remember everything about that meal.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the sights, the smells, the people I was with, and the taste that just absolutely blew my mind. I did not know that things could taste that good.
Yeah.
So that brings me right back to that moment in time.
Yeah.
So we have this huge relationship with food. And then the other question I like to ask people is like, what is your favorite memory from your childhood associated with food?
Mm.
And so that gets people thinking. And so for me, it's going to Lucky Wishbone.
Okay.
And the fried chicken.
Okay.
And is it the best thing I ever ate in my life? No. Mm-hmm. Is it good? Yeah, sure. Of course.
Absolutely.
But the reason that I have such a connection to that and such a memory to it is because when we lived in Wasilla, my dad, he worked in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. The man worked for 35 years or so in Anchorage and commuted every day of his life in order to put food on the table for us. Mm-hmm. So he was gone a little bit. And when we would come into Anchorage to go grocery shopping or something, we would always stop at Lucky Wishbone mm-hmm. to have lunch with him.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't so much about necessarily the food itself, but the moment of being with my family,
yeah.
sitting down, having the big papa mm-hmm. or my mom having the mama meal and having that fried chicken and having that milkshake and the experience of being with my family.
Yeah.
So when I ask these type of questions, it just really makes people connect and they get to share more. A lot of what these tours are about, I found out, is getting these people and to have a conversation.
Right.
So it's, yes, it is me storytelling. It's me talking about history. It's me telling about growing up in Alaska. It's to me talking about bear stories or mm-hmm. whatever else. But really, it's about having a conversation. Mm-hmm. And when I realized that, it really like opened things up a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really knocked it out of the park there. I definitely appreciated that. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, your stories and the history of the city that you embark on, the people that go on these tours. So where does the nickname Sourdough Dan come from?
Sourdough Dan. So this is, I don't know, I think this is kind of a funny story, but you know, the whole thing with sourdough now is I talk about the history of sourdough in Alaska, you know, the sourdough starter coming up from San Francisco with the miners and the gold miners and all that, and then how it became something that they would call like real Alaskan men who knew and women who knew how to handle themselves in the wild and that were just really experienced up here.
Right.
So I kept like making this joke, you know, I'd be like, and everybody calls me Sourdough Dan. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's not true. Nobody calls me that, but my mom calls me Damn It Dan quite often. So I thought this was just a really silly joke, and I thought it was pretty funny. But people on my tours, they started talking about the Sourdough Dan character online, Facebook, and stuff like that. Mm. And so other people in, that would take my tours later on, they would call me that in the restaurants and stuff like that. And, hey, do you know Sourdough Dan? And then so the restaurants... The people that worked there would start calling me that. And then people on the street, they would recognize me. They'd be like, oh, Sourdough Dan. And then I got all these requests for interviews and things like that. So what I thought was just a really dumb joke turned into this whole character that we incorporated into the tour, you know. And, you know, the thing is that do I know how to handle myself out in the wilderness of Alaska? You know, sure. You know, I'm all right, you know. Am I going to rub two sticks together and make a fire after like 3 days of rain in the Alaska wilderness? No, that's not going to happen. So these old timers, the real sourdoughs I know, you know, they're looking at me like, Dan, really? Really, man? And, you know, once I explain it to them, I'm saying, look, you know, when people come to Alaska, they look at me and they see what they imagine Alaska is going to be because I got, you know, I got the big beard. I wear the flannel shirts with the suspenders on purpose for the tours to kind of give them that character.
Right.
But it is just a character. It's meant to invoke those thoughts and things that people think about Alaska. You know, they read about Alaska in the books. They see us in the reality TV shows, in the movies, you know, Jack London, Robert Service, you know, the book Hatchet. And then they see these reality TV shows that are mostly ridiculous, you know, and the movies, you know, like Don't Even Get Me Started on Into the Wild or anything like that. But they see all these and they come up with this imagery of what Alaska's like. And so I give them a little bit of that, you know, I show them that character and they enjoy it. And it's for whatever reason, it resonated with people and I don't mind at all just hamming it up. You know, I love telling really bad jokes and I love telling stories about growing up in the wilderness and stuff like that, you know, so to speak. And it's a good time, you know, it's fun.
Is there a legacy you want to leave behind?
I don't know that I have a specific answer for that, but this is what I will say is that me and my brother are very community minded.
Yeah.
So we're from Alaska, you know, we're born and raised here. It matters to us what our reputation is.
Yeah.
It matters that we are a positive force in the community for as much as we can be. We want to work with other people as much as possible. We're here to lift everybody up, lift each other up, and, you know, just have a good time. And hopefully we all make a little bit of money while we're doing it. The big thing is the relationships that we've been able to develop in the restaurant industry in Anchorage have been absolutely phenomenal. We're not from the restaurant industry, so we don't have experience with that. And so when we came on to the scene, everybody's like, who are these guys, you know? And a lot of what I was hearing is like, hey, we like the idea. We think it's pretty cool, but, you know, let's see how it goes. And within a couple of weeks of people knowing me, you know, things worked out really good. And they were much more willing to work with us. You know, like when we got Humpies on board and Mike, the general manager there, he agreed to do the tour with us and let us come to his establishment. Then we had a little bit more sway because we were able to kind of just say, hey, look, you know, Humpies is on board, you know, and then, hey, look, Tent City's on board. Moose Isle of Mode, you know, Gelato, the Italian ice cream place. And Fire Island Bakery, you know. When we were able to say that we were working with these people, it opened up a lot of doors for us. And I got to say that Humpies in particular, all of our restaurants have worked with us incredibly well, and they've all done wonderful things. Because let's be frank, like none of them need us. We don't bring a whole lot to the table, but we need them a lot. And Humpies in particular, Mike down at Humpies has gone way out of his way to work with us and help us get established. And I can say that we're extremely appreciative of what they've done. They are always one of the top things that people talk about on our tours because they do a little bit of something new on the platter or on the plate for us that they don't do on the main menu.
Right.
So I just want to shout out to them because they invest a whole lot into downtown Anchorage, into the city. And we are extremely appreciative.
Man, I just got about one more question left, and this is the most important question of all.
That's a lot of pressure.
Man, you're not sweating. You look like you're ready. So, Alaskan Footprint Tours, you guys, I see you guys market yourself on social media, and I usually stay away from this kind of thing. From tours, and I've gone on tours before, they're fine, but it just seemed like, you know, cash cows, right? Like, oh, it's just, you know, you don't do that, man. You have such a genuine business and a genuine business model. I appreciate you, and all I want to ask you is, where can people find you?
Well, that's some high praises that I'm gonna have to live up to now. Now I'm gonna have to make extra big lies when I do my tours to impress people. No, akfootprints.com is where we're at, and we're actually going to be launching a new website here in September. So the one we have currently is, needs a little bit of improvement, but the new one we're launching is going to be fantastic. I can't wait for that. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, and yeah, all our information's out there, man. You just put Alaska Footprints into Google and you'll find us. We have a Google business profile.
Okay.
And we're going to be doing a lot of marketing coming up this winter to really hammer this out for next season. We hope to double or triple what we did this year. Okay. So, yeah.
And do we have any other, if we're allowed to talk about this, do we have any other restaurants on the horizon?
Absolutely. So we just started a breakfast tour or a morning tour. And so we're working with the Biscuit Club.
Ooh.
We're working with Snow City Cafe.
Okay.
Kobuk. We're doing donuts at the Kobuk. We're still going to Humphrey's for the breakfast tour as well. And then Dark Horse Coffee we're working with.
Okay.
And then as soon as we get vans, which we don't know when that'll be, but the second that we get vans, we're going to be expanding across the entire city. And that's when it's going to get interesting to me because it opens up a lot more opportunities for, you know, different places and incorporate as many people as we can into our little deal here.
Yeah. Everyone that's listening, thank you for joining us today about our discussion with Sourdough Dan Morris, the creator and the tour guide for Alaskan Footprint Tours. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Justin Williams. Coming up next, we'll be speaking with the founder of the Anchorage Independent Worker Alliance after this short break. Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Justin Williams, and now we're here with Atlas Katari, a local entrepreneur and founder of the Anchorage Independent Workers Alliance. The audience obviously doesn't know you. I know you. We've known each other for a few years now. Not terribly long, but we have definitely crossed paths on different ventures, shared ideas with each other, encouraged each other on that entrepreneurial field. Would you like to share your story about what led you to entrepreneurship in Alaska?
Sure. Let me start with a quick intro. Hello, everyone. My name is Atlas Katari. They, them, please. I am an entrepreneur, a non-binary writer, a culture observer, and a friend of Justin Williams. I started as an entrepreneur probably younger than I can think, but I never really considered myself an entrepreneur. Definitely more of a writer, artist growing up. But when I continued through my path of, like, working for retail, working for food. Obviously, I don't think really anyone enjoys those jobs, but I found there was just something deeper to the discontentment that I was finding. And it was probably sourced in my need for control, I will admit that, but also in knowing that I had more power to create the life that I wanted than maybe we've always been told. We have more power than you think.
You want to talk about that for a little bit? I think there's a lot of Alaskans out there, I think, that want to metaphorically, I don't want to say sit in your seat necessarily, but maybe they have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are surrounded by entrepreneurs, whether they know it or not, all the time. People with ideas, people with the energy to execute those ideas, podcasters, you know, people who start food trucks instead mm-hmm. of working in, you know, a bank or an office or whatever. But the Anchorage Independent Worker Alliance feels like a place where we can kind of come together and share those ideas and realize, okay, I'm not by myself. Maybe there is something to this. And maybe I do belong, because instead of facing imposter syndrome, I'm seeing collaboration over competition.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the Anchorage Independent Worker Alliance and maybe when you started it. And, you know, obviously it's still active. It's still going
mm-hmm.
very strong. But yeah, tell Alaska about that.
Yeah. So I think Anchorage Independent Worker Alliance, or AIWA, I'll say from now on, is a fantastic example of like reiterating on an idea that you feel in your soul needs to happen, but like you just like don't have the resources to figure it out, or resources not just meaning like money, but also time, also knowledge, also people, also mm-hmm. relationships, also belief in yourself. That's a resource because that gets depleted. AIWA was the third iteration of the idea that I and the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce have had. So initially in 2019, when I moved back to Alaska, I really wanted to group young entrepreneurs together because I knew that there was a lot of things that if you could tackle early on, you could really inspire someone to take a completely different path than what they've been taught their entire life, which is to go to college and to get a job and, you know, the standard American dream that we're told. So in 2019, that was called Young Alaskan Solopreneurs. Mm. And at the time, I didn't have the resources to strategize the effectiveness of what I was doing. I was just kind of doing things willy-nilly, and I didn't know why, and it felt bad, and I was trying to do everything myself, and so I just quit. And I think that's normal, and I think that's okay. I was okay with that decision because I knew something was off, and I didn't know what yet, and I didn't want to continue to expel emotional energy to something that was giving me nothing back. So we dropped it. I dropped it. 2020 comes around and we all know what happens then. And Anchorage Chamber of Commerce comes out with Anchorage Gig Economy Network. So the Anchorage Gig Economy Network was to help people kind of navigate the gig economy, which I see as not just entrepreneurs and small businesses, but also DoorDash drivers and Uber drivers and mm-hmm. People who kind of take like side gigs or just random things like that. I don't think those people consider themselves entrepreneurs, and I don't think they are entrepreneurs. Mm. I think those people are reiterating on employment in a different way.
Right.
And so while they're not employees of Uber or DoorDash or whatever, they are still being told what to do, where to go, how to do it. Like everything is taken care of. Mm. So it's like they're not strategizing anything. They're not really in control of the business side of it. So I gave that feedback to Anchorage Chamber of Commerce because what they were reiterating on for a full year just wasn't working. It wasn't attractive. There was no reason for it to exist as it was existing. And so I gave feedback and they were super receptive. And that was what I needed to see, was not just receptive to my feedback, but within the next month. So they were doing monthly meetings. Within the next meeting, they'd implemented like tons of changes. And so I was like, okay, I see you are hearing me and you're listening to me and you're actually wanting to make this thing better. Now I can invest myself into it, because if they weren't willing to change themselves, it was never going to work
right.
with at least being partnered with the Chamber of Commerce in this. And so after a town hall, we brought together the what little, you know, community we had from AGen and then a couple of outside people, you know, just like my relationships or other people's relationships, to have a town hall, which is essentially just like a group community discussion about like, what do we need? What are we doing here? What needs to change? What do you guys need, et cetera? And so basically it was just a way for me and the chamber to ask the community of who we're targeting for AIWA, which is independent workers. We were very intentional about saying independent workers and not entrepreneurs and not small business owners and not freelancers and not XYZ, because we needed to target that demographic that I grew up as and that you've noticed too, people who don't identify as entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. people who don't like that label for any reason, because it's probably, you know, it's been, you know, social media-ized mm-hmm. and exploded to a degree. And so bringing these people together who feel unconventional in entrepreneurship about what they need out of a community to help them improve their endeavor, improve their likelihood of success. And we heard two big things. First, relationships.
Okay.
Mentorship, people, peer support, you know, that sort of like people that you can congregate around, et cetera. Big on relationships. And so with those relationships, then they wanted more opportunity.
Right.
So relationships obviously bring opportunity. But we can bring opportunity to the table without relationships as well. And so with the Chamber of Commerce on my side and my integration in the startup community, we've been able to really pull in some cool people to help bring this thing together. And I think what people don't see a lot of is the inside work that has to happen for me in order to make this thing work. And I don't want to make this about me, but what I'm saying is from young Alaskan solopreneurs to AWA, nothing has changed in terms of my concept. The vision has remained the same. What has changed is me.
So the core vision of AWA from its evolution to what it is today, who is it for and what purpose does it serve?
So Anchorage Independent Worker Alliance came together to help address the needs of the like non-conventional entrepreneurship community.
Yeah.
There are a lot of resources out there for small businesses and startups. Mm. There are less resources out there for artists who want to make a living doing their art, seriously. Yeah. And there are even less resources on how to build communities around that.
Oh, yeah.
So repeat the question again. That it's like that I answered the first part.
Yes. So what is AWA for and who is AWA for?
Okay, so I answered who it's for.
Yes.
What AWA is for. AWA really came together to help both prove that communities that are grassroots and based in mutual aid and not funded basically externally can happen and can grow. And so, you know, you might question, oh, well, you're with the chamber. How are you not funded? It's like the chamber doesn't do much other than help give us that sort of social credibility. They do a little bit of funding for our events, but that's to give like pastries. It's not to rent out an event space for an entire day. Mm-hmm. What is it for? It's to help give the power back to these people who don't feel like they're entrepreneurs and help them see that whether or not they take on the identity of entrepreneur, the label of entrepreneur, they can learn from other entrepreneurs and apply that to their art career or to their, you know, small business endeavor or to whatever they're doing that maybe doesn't feel like traditional entrepreneurship. So a lot of that is relationships, as I mentioned, opportunities and connecting people together in order for them to go off and build great things. But it's also the inside work, too, talking about peer support stuff is more on the ends of like, hey, this client is being unreasonable, right? Send screenshot of an email, obviously not with the names in it and stuff. And then your peers can say, yes, they're totally being unreasonable. Or no, actually, they're being fine. You're overthinking this.
Right.
You can get that kind of feedback that your friends and family can't give you. Mm-hmm. Like your friends and family aren't supposed to support your endeavor. They don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. They don't know anything about entrepreneurship or like what you're going through. So finding the people who do know what you're going through, who do understand the steps that it takes to get from where you are to where you want to be, who can help you actualize that vision, that's more important to me than even professional mentorship, in my opinion.
And that's what AWA does.
And that's what AWA does is we will connect you to quote-unquote professional mentors, people who are 25 years ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the real change and real work comes from those people who are two steps ahead of you.
Right. Right. And sometimes that looks like direct mentorship in some organizations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And other times it just looks like cohorts and, you know, potential collaborators who are doing similar things or are like-minded, like you just said, giving you feedback and constructive criticism on how am I making my business better or my business plan better or, you know, my contracts or, you know, what narrowing down what our ideal clients look like.
How am I making myself a better business owner?
Absolutely.
A better person in business. Because if I've learned anything about business, and I've owned a business full time for the last 3 years, for the listeners to reference, you gotta be human. You gotta be yourself, because if you're not, and if you're putting on a show, and if you're trying to be that like fake facade that we all hate, like water cooler office BS, people can sniff it out. And as soon as you stop doing that, as soon as you lean into whatever it is that makes you weird or makes you yourself, people will gravitate towards you. And I've felt that this week for sure.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, we humans, adults, we can smell disingenuous intent from 3,000 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Any business, small mm-hmm. business, big business.
And within ourselves.
And absolutely. Well, we have to acknowledge it first. It's a lot easier to look at someone else.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying is we can feel it mm-hmm. in ourselves. What it shows up as for most people is guilt or shame or even disgust with themselves. That's not like you. The narrative that might play in your head is that like you're a failure. But the narrative that should play in your head, in my opinion, is that you can take back control.
Mm-hmm.
You are doing in taking the steps to notice that sick, oily feeling in your stomach that you know something's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that you could be doing something more, that your soul begs for more. And the hardest part is just acknowledging it, because then you have to start making choices and changes.
And AWA is there to help support that process.
We are here to become, we are here to become the first entry point for any person who wants to start taking steps or has already begun taking steps and realizes that they need a community to congregate around in order to scale. Because I'm telling you right now, if you're trying to build something, you're trying to build a business, a side hustle, the next big startup, the next big app, whatever you're doing out there, if you're doing it alone, you're going to fail.
Mm. That's a pretty bold statement.
And I will stick true to it, because it depends on what your definition of success is, first and foremost. So it's always subjective.
Yes.
It's intentionally vague.
Yes.
But you will fail, because if you don't fail in money, you'll fail in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't fail in relationships, you'll fail in, acknowledgement of your work. If you don't fail in acknowledgement of your work, then you'll fail in money. And if you don't, so there is a balance you have to strike. And I think what people are scared of is being seen as someone who doesn't know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We all don't know what we're doing.
Yeah. So AWA provides genuine community. It provides support for entrepreneurs. It provides resources and a safe space to give and accept constructive criticism as iron sharpens iron.
Yeah. I'd say, if to put it succinctly, Anchorage Independent Worker Alliance exists to empower those who know that they want to be an independent worker with the skills, resources, people in order to achieve that. And it also faces publicly to help show Alaska and Anchorage, as a whole, more about what entrepreneurship actually is.
There it is.
And what the gig economy can actually bring to people. Because we have a problem in this state. We have a problem with investing in innovation and entrepreneurs. We have a problem with seeing past the next couple years and the next PFD cycle or the next election. And I think America can say that in general, but Alaska in particular, because we've been so embedded in oil and gas, that seems like the only future we have, but that's just not true. And so we need to start inspiring Alaskans statewide, in my opinion, to step up to the plate, to say, hey, I have this vision in my soul, in my mind, in what I have always dreamed of as a kid, and I want to reach out to that, and I want to grab it. Because as individual Alaskans, we shape the future of Alaska.
Mm.
We have so many interesting and unique things here, not just the beauty of our state or the fact that we have all this oil. I'm talking the way that Alaskan Native corporations are set up is unmatched across the world.
Right.
There are no other indigenous people in the world who have that kind of power and have played the capitalism game to their benefit.
Yeah.
That is inspiring to me.
Right.
That is okay, us as Alaskan Native people we're not going to survive in this world if we don't do something different.
And that answers my next question, which was going to be, why does Alaska need the Workers Alliance?
I will say Anchorage Independent Worker Alliance is not addressing the future needs of Alaska as much as, say, somewhere like Alaska Version 3 is.
Sure.
Or even the people who, I think, the Fairbanks Action Coalition, they do a lot for regenerative economies and stuff. We're not focused so much on the systems of Alaska and dismantling those or benefiting from them or just teaching people how to, but more so creating your own path.
Right.
It is really reaching out to those people who want to bushwhack their own path. People who don't take the normal trails and who'll go off the beaten path because they know that, something better might be over there.
Right. What other things do we gain from entrepreneurship that we can teach others that may want to know? Like, if you were talking to Alaska right now and the question they were asking you was, what else do I get out of it?
I have a really fun statistic for this. Okay. And this is hard data. You can pull this up from the CED. Okay. 90% of the jobs created in the last 5 years in Alaska were created by businesses who were less than 5 years old. Mm. You want new businesses.
Right, right, right. That's pretty powerful.
It's insane.
That's wild.
It's insane. And you don't think it's real. You can pull it up.
Yeah.
You can pull it up.
Mm-hmm. So for the person that's, you know, stuck in a job they don't like, right? There might be in a financial bind. Maybe their family isn't supportive. They have a, you know, they have a child to look after. They have to make sure that they're doing everything in their power to have some sense of stability. But they need to get out there and start making some power moves and open up that business and write a business plan and, you know, talk to the bank about those loans or whatever it is that they need to do. What encouragement would you have for that person?
I'll say you're from your question specifically, if they're, you know, they're really agreeing with what you're saying there, they're still thinking in the narrative that they were taught. Mm-hmm. Going to banks is a traditional way to get finance. Mm-hmm. Writing a business plan is a traditional way to start a business. You know, like reaching out to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, even. They're my partners and they absolutely have a part to play. But that is a traditional route mm-hmm. to finding other business people. And what I found in places like the Chamber, Young Professionals Group, great professionals group, but it's not entrepreneurs.
Right.
It's like people who are also employees who just want to be more involved in other people who love their careers.
For sure.
So that serves a purpose, but it doesn't fit what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. Same idea of like the Small Business Development Center. Holy crap, they are a fantastic resource for small businesses because they can help you with taxes and finances and getting that loan and doing all those things. But they were no help to a freelancer because I don't have a traditional business and I don't want a traditional business. And I think that that is where AWOL separates itself is we're not just going to give you the support you can find online or anywhere else. We're going to break it down and be real with you. Mm. We're going to tell you when you are the problem. And I can tell you right now, 80%, you are the problem. Mm-hmm. It is either the things you are thinking about and how you're thinking about them, or the way you're trying to approach something and you're being stubborn about it, or you just can't admit that you need help, you know? And if you can't ever admit that you need help, you will never go find it. Mm-hmm. And then you will never progress. So, you know, when I talk about like, the big aspect that we touch on is that internal part of entrepreneurship. It's true because it's like interpersonal and intrapersonal, which is inside yourself. And, you know, if there is an entrepreneur out there, and I will say it, like a real entrepreneur out there who's never had like a mental breakdown, I don't believe them.
Right.
So, you know, it's not an easy path and we all know that. But for some of us, it's the only path.
I hear you. Where in the world do we find you? How do we communicate not just with the founder of AWA, but with AWA? How do we connect with the people? How do we get involved? Where can we find you?
For sure. So first and foremost, we have a Facebook group. Mm-hmm. So if you look up Anchorage Independent Worker Alliance on Facebook, you should find us.
Okay.
Facebook.com/ Anchorage Indie Workers. That's Anchorage INDIE Workers. Or you could add me, Atlas Qatari, on Facebook. I have a public profile. It's public facing, so feel free to add me even if you're a stranger. LinkedIn as well. And I can absolutely, you know, bring you into Anchorage Independent Worker Alliance. If you want to DM me, we can chat. Like, I'm very open. And if you want to meet in person, the last Tuesday of every month, we host a free co-work day. And it changes every month, so you might have to look online on Facebook to find the event. But for September, it's going to be at the boardroom all day from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. essentially. Literally all day. Last Tuesday of the month. And that'll be going on for November, I believe, as well. And I think we're taking a break for Christmas.
All right. That sounds like a plan. Well, you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and that was Atlas Qatari of the Anchorage Independent Workers Alliance. Coming up next, State of Art on Alaska Public Media.
Welcome to State of Art on Hometown Alaska, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Coming up, I speak with artist Linda Lucky. Her show at the International Gallery of Contemporary Art is called Loose Ends. She'll be turning 80 later this month, and the show is a celebration of milestones and unrestrained creativity. She moved up here from Long Island 20 years ago after decades as an art teacher.
I thought this is an opportunity of a lifetime while I'm here. You could be anything you want up here. You always wanted to be an actor? They're dying for you to get on the stage. You know, you don't have to play Broadway. Enjoy a very full creative life right here. All the arms are open to embrace creative minds, creative people. So I'm in my perfect place because this is the most eccentric place I've ever lived in. Crazy light, crazy everything. But I didn't know I was so eccentric and I fit. I'm like a good fit.
Well, I see right? that, you know, you're turning 80 September 23rd. Is that correct?
Yes, in 2 weeks.
Happy birthday. Happy early birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. I always love celebrating. Drag it out. Have fun.
Yeah. Well, your show at IGCA is called Loose Ends, and it looks like it's described, you know, as a celebration of milestones. And 80 is obviously a pretty significant milestone. And, you know, with that right around the corner, you know, leading into this show or maybe hitting some major milestones, has that influenced your recent creative output?
Well, it was a motivation. I said, boy, there's so, and I always like to celebrate anyway. And I said, wow, 20 years here, 80 years old. Are you kidding me? You got to have some fun with this. And so I was very, very lucky that the International had the confidence in me that I could pull off a show in four spaces. Four. This is a big, big thing. I'll never do another like this again because it's way big, but it's successful. I'm thrilled I did it. And you get better, you know, when you do something over and over, you just get better at it. So I really got, I acquired some more skill and I had joyfulness making the whole thing. And it took 3 months. I got the gig winter solstice in 21. And then I went to my friend's winter solstice party and I made the announcement to all my buddies. And I said, look, I've got the gig, the whole joint. I'm expecting support from my friends, and, you know, whether emotional support, whatever. And they said, we're in, we're thrilled for you. Good, go for it. And so I, 3 months, I planned, I thought, you have to think things through. You just don't make art and throw it up on the wall. Everything has to be related to something else. There's to be a reason, in my view. So 3 months to plan it and then 6 months to do it. 9 months.
I mean, is there also kind of maybe a maturity component to that that maybe makes you a little bit more confident in putting your work out there with, you know, with the kind of purpose that you're trying to achieve and maybe not quite second guessing yourself as much as maybe if you were just starting out?
Yeah, definitely. You have a lot of experience and look at all those years of inspiring kids to, you know, get in touch with their, always keep true to their, who they were. Trust your instincts, trust who you are. Because my mentor said, what are you going to give people, those kids, those they never have art again? What would you do as an art teacher in your class if they never had art again? What do you think is the most thing you can pass on to the kids? And I decided, in keeping with good old Albert Einstein, that imagination is more important than knowledge. It was a cornerstone idea. So I was a fitness instructor for the imagination. I said, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make sure that I set up challenges all the time to keep that imagination wet and you know, fluid and strong. Yeah, imagination. That's going to solve the cure for AIDS or for anything. It's always imagination. So that's what I give. Yeah. And what I gave all those years. I was a fitness instructor for that.
I love that idea. And I mean, I feel like you've probably benefited from practicing that in your own life, is just keeping that
Absolutely.
Creative muscle just strengthened.
Absolutely.
And yeah. Well, I want to talk about some stuff in the show itself. So, I mean, there was a particular piece that stuck out to me. You might kind of know the one I'm talking about, but it is a self-portrait of you wearing nothing but a sheer scarf and a hat that says Art Slut.
Oh, my nude.
Yeah.
My famous nude.
And you were inspired by another artist who did a similar thing. Can you tell me about that painting and maybe some of the inspiration? I think it might be my personal favorite.
Well, Alice Neal is the painter who inspired me. She's a people painter. She even had, there are many books on her, and one of them is called Not Sitting Pretty. Did all kinds of people. Could be somebody with TB laying in a hospital bed. It would be somebody, all kinds of people of different colors, all of that. She was magnificent. And I love how she kept this light lavender blue line around, whether she was a leg of a table, a piece of fruit, or an arm of a person. She always had that line that she kept to hold the form. And so I was crazy about her stuff because I love to paint people. And so I noticed she was born in 1900. She, at 1980, she was 80 years old, she painted herself in the nude. And I thought, this is what I saw. You know, I was just in my 40s looking at this picture, and I said, wow, this is pretty wonderful, courageous of her, just sitting there. You know, she's got her little paintbrush, a little rag in one hand. She's totally naked, even more so than me, because she had nips and I didn't put in nips. I said, no, not necessary. They'll see plenty of skin. You know? And so you'll actually see more skin on a beach than you would on me. You do see, I'm sitting there naked with this ethereal see-through scarf, but it just covers in the right spots, you know. And so, and I thought that was one of the most important paintings I was going to do for the show, because I had to meet the challenge, the Alice Neal challenge. Can you paint your butt nude at 80? And so I did, and it came out, and people said it is perfect. Because it's not racy, it's not pornographic, it's just perfect.
Yeah, I feel like it's a very good kind of indicator of who you are and kind of where you're at in your life now. Kind of like some of the stuff that we were talking about with, you know, maybe really putting yourself out there, some of the kind of exercising some more creative muscles, and maybe just having the confidence to be like, yes, this is me, this is it.
Right. It's do or die. You know, when you're 80, you got to stand up for the things that you maybe have been avoiding. So that's why it's loose ends. I never painted death ever. And I drew it once, a little bird that had just fallen out of the nest. It was the sweetest little drawing, and it's in the show. But I never painted death. You know, when I think of Goya and May 8th and people getting shot and dead birds, dead everything I've seen in beautiful paintings, I said, but where's yours? I said, I have to deal with this. So my girlfriend happened to have just died. And her daughter sent me the picture of her father, who was divorced from the mother for many years, but they stayed a connection. He comes running to the hospital in 10 minutes, and he's there with his hand. Did you know the death picture?
The clutching the face?
Yes. And I wrote that I was sure her cheek was covered with his tears. You know, it was a very lovely, lovely. I painted it as best I could. It deserved the very best attention. And, you know, a really good quality painting. And I found the most glorious, exquisite gold frame for it, too. And it sold. Somebody was very interested, kept staring at it, and she bought it.
Wow.
And the daughter said it was too sad on too many levels, but she said it is so beautiful. With 4 exclamation points, it is so beautiful. But someone else purchased it. But I'm so proud that I was able to take death and be able to show it in that way.
Well, let's kind of talk about the variety of the work. I was actually kind of surprised about just how much variety there was, you know, scanning through some sculpture, various styles of painting, maybe some kind of sketches, some kind of collage type stuff, lampshades as well. You seem to be just, I mean, obviously you're just exploding with creativity, but can you maybe talk about the diversity of your work and maybe what makes you whip up some papier-mâché versus grabbing the brushes?
Well, I like to do both. But papier-mâché, I think, is an home. I use it. I heard another artist who was a teacher, retired, and she was talking about a piece she made one night at a member show at the International. And she says, and I bought that piece. She says, I use a lot of cardboard as an homage to all my students who I taught over the years, right? And I use papier-mâché, I'm sure, as a throwback and an homage to the joyous times I had working with kids. And they love papier-mâché because you could make it big and it's lightweight. You can puncture it, paint it, glue on it, do anything you want with papier-mâché. And so I stick with it because it's fun and it's also an homage to them, to the kids.
Yeah.
And so kids will paint on anything as a canvas. And so I decided to get a whole bunch of white lampshades. and then just do paintings on them.
Yeah.
That would be so much fun. And a couple of them have sold, and they've gone over big before when I had a different show in the guest room in the back. But I've never been in front before. So I have a friend artist who moved away, but she said, Lucky, this is your time now. You get out of the back room. It's time to go in the front. So I went in the front in a big way.
Yeah, you did.
So, right. But yeah, I like variety. So I'd be bored just doing one thing all the time.
Oh, I can see
maybe
that.
Maybe it comes from teaching. Maybe it comes from knowing that I had to do all that variety for them because I had to learn everything about the art process, materials, everything.
Yeah. You know? Totally.
Probably that's where it comes from.
Yeah, that's so cool. I love the kind of that you're still kind of keep the connection between your teaching days and kind of inspiring the next generation of artists and incorporating that into your own work, even though, yeah, you've been doing this for a while. And yeah, I just love that idea of kind of maintaining some of the roots of teaching and mm-hmm. spreading the good word about, you know, creativity.
There's even a handout, How to Have an Art Room at Home. I was really into getting these parents to please support your kids' love of art. Buy art supplies, whatever. Find a little corner. Get a box. Put it all in there. You know what I mean? Very important.
Yeah, very totally. Important. Would this show maybe look the same if you had done it 10, 20 years earlier?
It wouldn't be as, I don't think it would be as skillful. Because, of, you know, you get better as you get older and long as you're working. Not if you're doing nothing, but if you can just age and become ridiculous. So you have to keep up your, you know, drawing, painting, whatever it is. So I don't think it would have been, I don't know, it may have been delightful in another way, maybe stronger in some ways, who knows. But I think I pulled out all the stops for this.
I only have like a couple more questions for you, but maybe let's kind of talk about maybe like the next generation a little bit. You know, what can parents do from like your perspective as, you know, a creative, an artist and a teacher? What can parents do to kind of instill some of that growing that creative muscle and instilling like imagination in their kids?
Well, I think it's not what we say so much, it's what we do. And I think if kids see that their parents go out of their way to support, go to a play, go to the pack and support symphonies, go to Arctic Entries, they do all those storytelling. I've done two of those there, by the way. And they really should have a place in their home where kids can go and have their own supplies and a little space, a little table. I give a Raven drawing every year to the KMBA when they do a fundraiser, an art fundraiser, you know, for them. Mm-hmm. This one year, she buys this baby Raven that I did, one of my favorite Raven drawings. So sweet. It's got a little feet and it's sticking into like a little Cheeto. And it's got Cheeto schmutz on its little baby beak. And it is the cutest. And it's not sentimental. It's strictly reality. This is what they do. The woman bought it for her 8-year-old. Do you know that, and it was in a mat and in a frame. That kid will cherish that forever. I will tell, she will take that with her. She leaves home. She will have that. That's what's interesting. When your kid grows up with a piece of something, it could be something that hung on their crib that they connect with, or art on the wall. So I really think buying art for kids is great. Something that they can relate to, you know? So baby Raven, who couldn't relate?
That was my conversation with artist Linda Lucky. Her show Loose Ends will be at the International Gallery of Contemporary Art until September 23rd, her 80th birthday. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
All right, everybody, thank you for joining us today. Our guests today were Sourdough Dan Morris of Alaskan Footprints Food Tours and Atlas Qatari of Anchorage Independent Workers Alliance. I'm your host, Justin Williams. Ammon Swinson's our producer. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Home Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.